In this interview, it's all about rock star photography with Annabelle DeFlux.
This is TWIP.
Hey, welcome back to another episode of This Week in Photo. I'm your host, Frederick Van Johnson. Today, we're gonna go behind the scene, backstage. We're gonna talk about rock star photography. We're gonna talk about all kinds of cool stuff with one of my newest friends, Annabelle DeFlux. Annabelle, welcome to the show. How's it going?
Good. Thank you so much for having me today.
No, it's good. It's good to have you. Listen to you. You're all professional now. Before we started recording, she was not this professional. I was. We were just having a good old chat. No, this is going to be good. I'm excited to chat with you. There's so much to chat about. You know, I was looking through your bio on your website, which I'll link to in the description for this episode on YouTube and on the blog. But what a storied path you've had from where you were to where you are. Let's start there. So we're going to talk about musician and rock star photography, but set the stage to continue the metaphor. Set the stage for us with who Annabelle is and how you got into this whole photography thing.
Oh, the ultimate origin story.
The origin story. Yes. What? Where were you when the spider bit you?
Oh, well, I was about 8 years old, and by spider, you mean camera. Yeah. Camera bit me. Or more like it fastened towards my arm. So I was about, 8, 9, 10 years old, around that range, because of course, the older you get, the foggier your memory becomes. And I was always a very artistic child, and I was very lucky to have parents who always really fostered a lot of my creativity. So before I could even write my own name, I was already drawing and painting and kind of exploring all the different artistic endeavors that exist in the world. But the only one that I hadn't actually tried until a bit later in my elementary school years was photography. And the way that came about was I had a birthday coming up, and it was kind of everyone racking their brain around what to get me, considering I've tried every single art form under the sun. So my grandfather went to Target and bought me this little red point-and-shoot camera, if that brings back any sort of kind of nostalgic memories to anybody out there.
Yeah,
and gave it to me as a gift. And just something kind of clicked in my mind, and I became so incredibly obsessed and fascinated with photography, to a point where the camera was pretty much an extension of my arm, and to this day continues to be an extension of my arm. And I was so in love with photography that unfortunately I actually gave up all of my other artistic endeavors to exclusively pursue photography. And my best subjects that I had around me were animals. So that's actually how I began my photography journey, was photographing pets. So when I was about 15 years old, my mom kind of gave me this challenge going, well, if you want to do photography, because prior to this, I had been saying I was going to be a photographer professionally. And, you know, that's kind of where parents get a little wary. They're like, oh, art as a career path. Well, then. So she gave me this challenge that she will help me open my own photography business at 15, but it must become a profitable endeavor in the next few years, or I will have to pick a different career path. Where some people kind of take that as, wow, that's rather harsh. I take it as, thank goodness she did this, because that was the kick in the butt to really look into this as to a viable future for myself. So at the young age of 15, I went out there and started with photographing people's pets, because my childhood best friend used to compete in dog shows and dog sports. And she kind of roped me into the world of canine athletes, which is where I landed a spot as a kind of a official photographer for some agility trials local, just down the street in the parks. Yeah. And to this day, when I'm not photographing musicians, I am still photographing dogs. I'm still photographing the animal competitions whenever I'm in town to do so. But anywho, so I really got deep into that and told myself that I would not photograph anything else. Animals were my thing. And then one of my good friends decided to date a musician. And the way that kind of all rolled was I was the only one who knew how to use a camera. So you know what happens when you're the only one who knows how to use a camera?
You're the photographer, yeah.
Pretty much is that you have musicians getting on their knees begging because they need really good photos. Nobody knows how to operate a camera. Cell phone's not going to cut it. So can you please take photos of me, please? And after quite a few weeks of going, no, that's not my thing. It's not what I do. I photograph animals. I had this kind of personal epiphany where I'm like, why am I limiting myself to just photographing animals when I could try other things? And if I don't like it, then I just won't do it again.
Yeah.
Which is kind of the philosophy that I hold in my career now. If I don't like it, I just won't do it again. But there's no harm in trying. And I'm glad that I did, because that kind of rolled into a really sincere love of photographing musicians and photographing live concerts and creating any sort of visual content for them, because it just kind of aligned my additional childhood love of music and being a big appreciator of music with my love of photography and allowing me to kind of contribute to the music industry in my own way. And besides the music, with that opening my mind to photographing and trying a lot of different things, I kind of dove my hands into every genre of photography I could think of. And some of them ended up sticking. For example, real estate, street, architecture, not really my thing.
Not so much,
fine.
Right?
That's why I
it's like the polar opposite. That's the opposite of music, right?
Yeah. Still life, not really my thing, but anything that had to do with living creatures, such as photographing animals and photographing fashion and models and family portraits and children and puppies and music, all of that ended up being something that I dove so deeply into. And to this day, at the age of 27, I am still continuing that photography career that I started at 15. And I'm happy to report that I did not have to pick a different career path.
That is great. So, you know what? I'm curious about that, because we talked about this a little bit in our pre-interview, and that's the idea of, you know, either pigeonholing yourself or typecasting yourself into a specific genre and how you don't do that. Can you talk about that a little bit? Because that's different from what a lot of photographers kind of subscribe to, in terms of do one thing and be known for that thing. You know, be the best at one thing versus being good or a jack of all or Jill of all trades. Like, what's your give some guidance on that for photographers that are like, oh, I didn't know that I could branch out and do a bunch of different things.
Absolutely. Well, I don't think there's any right or wrong way to approach your photography career, which is something that I also carry into whenever anyone is giving out any sort of business advice, because there's so many different ways to set up your business and there's so many different ways to set up your career that, again, one path is not a one size fits all for everyone. So whenever I see the kind of very contentious arguments over, well, photographers need to be, say, in-person sales photographers, or photographers have to be digital shoot and burns because that's what the career or the industry wants right now, or as a photographer, you need to do this or that. And I personally don't subscribe to any of that, because I believe that you can set up your business in whatever fashion suits you and be able to be good at it. Because if you're finding that there's some sort of discrepancy in success versus the way you set up your business, usually it's not the way that you set up your business. It's the way that you're running it. It usually tends to be where the discrepancies are. But to kind of roll it back to the initial question, I could very genuinely just not pick what I wanted to do. After I was able to try so many different types of photography, I found that I was doing myself a disservice if I were to pick only one to kind of invest all of my time into and not branch out in any other capacity. But I was always, of course, incredibly worried about doing so, because I had also been told the advice of just pick the one thing and pigeonhole yourself and stick there, because then you're going to be able to very easily find your clients, which there is a fact to that. When you know exactly who your demographic is, because you essentially shoot only one niche or one genre within a specific group of people, it can be a lot easier to market because you know exactly who your clients are. Mm-hmm. However, I'm also a person who is not content with complacency. And I find that for myself personally, if I were to only photograph one thing forever, I would start to feel very complacent, because they're although you are always improving, essentially until the day you die, because I say you're not an artist if you're not constantly learning, you will come to a point where you kind of reach the roof and there's not that much further you're going to go. And for me, that was equivalent to complacency. I can't allow myself to reach that roof. I have to do so many different things. And where my worry was of marketing so many different types of genres and finding people being very hesitant when they immediately think that I am either a jack or a Jill of all trades, I find that there was a way for me to kind of navigate that by showing, you know, I am a very diversified photographer. I do not say that I specialize in one thing. I photograph a lot of things. And the reason I can do that is because I know the maximum minimum capabilities of my gear, and because I've studied photography for long enough to be able to adapt the way that I shoot for whatever subject is in front of my lens. And I find that there was actually ended up being either attracting people in because they were going, well, you know, if we want to combine genres, or if we want to just throw something totally new at her, she can probably handle it if she's able to do so many different things. Or I'll get the people going, you know, I'm booking you for pets, but my cousin's a musician. And then I'll have musicians coming in. Yeah, I'm booking you to shoot my band on stage, but, you know, my sister has a wedding coming up.
Yeah.
And there was a lot of cross promotion going on there. I feel like once you get over the hurdle of your, I guess, ideology on it, and showing people that, no, I'm not diversified because I can't find something I like. I'm diversified because I know how to use my equipment. Yeah. Then you kind of open up that world of possibility there with people going, you know what? Yeah, she knows how to use her gear. She knows how to be a photographer. Therefore, I'm not hesitant about throwing something new at her because she can handle it.
Yeah, that's refreshing, because, you know, we all get that, right? Because, and we all turn away things, or maybe not you, you know, but a lot of photographers turn away jobs like, well, you know what? I'm a landscape photographer. No, I can't shoot your wedding. Or I'm I'm a baby photographer. So no, I'm not doing your senior photos or something like that. And you're saying, why not just say yes? It's all light. It's all photons. And if you understand your gear, f-stop, shutter speeds, ISOs, and all that stuff, why not just aim your camera over there versus over there, right?
Oh, absolutely. And immediately, I usually get hit with the question of, but the compositions are different. But, you know, the style is different. I'm like, yes. But again, style is very exclusive to you. It's your own aesthetic. And I can guarantee that your aesthetic will travel across your work. Because again, I photograph so many different things, but I still have people going, I can recognize your photo regardless of the subject matter, because the style tends to be consistent. And in terms of composition, for me, I teach photography classes all the time. I teach them for Sigma. I teach them with local camera stores, such as Sammy's Camera in Los Angeles. And I can go all day long lecturing you about the exact rules of composition, but the ultimate fact that I kind of stumbled upon at the end is composition is innate to a person. It's a feeling. You know when a composition is right and when a composition is wrong based on how you feel about it. So composing for different types of genres is more of a feeling at the end of the day, because the only reason I actually figured out how I kind of set up my compositions is solely because I started teaching photography, and I actually had to think about how I'm supposed to explain this to somebody. Because prior to teaching, I had no idea why I was doing the compositions I was doing, to be honest. I never really studied composition. It was something that I just kind of had, I suppose, from my exposure to art. I remember even having a design professor come to me going, did you do painting or something as a child? And I'm like, how did you know? I go, your compositions are immaculate. You can always figure out how to plan out your canvas.
Yeah. And that's, you know, it's so interesting that you say that, because it's the fundamentals are always the most important thing. And we look at all the different things that can trigger analysis paralysis these days, or hinder creativity, because there's so many toys, so much software, so many lenses, so many drones, 360 cameras, this, that, you know, AI. It's endless, right? It goes on and on and on. And it's easy to get lost in that storm and lose sight of what the thing is that you're supposed to be doing, and that's telling stories through your lens. So I want to talk about that. I want to talk about I know you tell a lot of stories, but I want to look at the musician side of your prism, you know, and when you move into that world, how does one get into that, right? Do you have to be cool? Like I know you have to be a good photographer.
I don't think I'm that cool.
You're pretty cool. You're pretty damn cool. So how do you get into that world? And it seems so like Hollywood and celebrity that you're just backstage rubbing elbows with these ridiculously talented people and all that stuff, and then photographing them and having drinks afterwards. How does that work? Take us behind the scenes into a day in the life of the rock star photographer.
Absolutely. So what I discovered, because I have no ties to music through my family. I have no ties to kind of celebrity world, is that it might feel unattainable, but it's actually incredibly attainable. Because at the end of the day, if you're in that industry and they are just regular people, then you can find a way in. There's so many different pathways to become a music photographer, but whatever pathway you decide to follow, it always starts with your local music community. Mm-hmm. I'm sure that's something that people have heard all the time. It's like, start local, start local, start local. And people try and kind of jump over that and not start local. But how I got started in music is that I photographed a small local band that just had a small local following. And I was doing their photos left and right and building relationships within that industry. And then whoops, they got signed by Universal Music Group. And guess wow. whose photos went along with that?
Yours.
And after that, it just kind of opened up the world of becoming known for music photography. And again, starting with your local community, you never know who knows somebody. So mm-hmm. you go out to your local shows, buy some drinks at the local bars and support the local scene and take some photos, start networking with the musicians there. Because again, you have no idea who knows whom.
Yeah.
And after, of course, that band got signed by Universal Music. And then I started working for music magazines who really needed some good photographers. And then just started reaching out to record labels and kind of poking around to see who needs a photographer. And just kind of began shooting more and more shows. The musicians themselves started noticing the work that I was producing. And then they saw their friends with photos that I took. And they wanted those photos. And then their buddy needed a photographer. And they go, hey, I know someone who's available who can come out and go do this.
Yeah.
And it really just kind of rolled that way. But I know plenty of fellow music photographers or associates that have started with just journalism. They have a background in journalism. And with written pieces, you need photos. So they were being sent out to take photos. I found that another way that I was kind of networking, a lot of what I did was, again, I worked for the music magazines. And I always had another passion of mine, which was writing, which is something that never really kind of elaborated back then. It was just, oh yeah, I like to write for fun and I like to write articulated pieces and whatnot. And they found that, oh, she can write. Can you interview as well? So when I said, oh, sure, why not? I'll go interview. That gave me even more kind of like a personable connection with musicians where they would remember me from interviews. They would see my photos. They would start putting the two together because they had an opportunity to meet me and kind of see that I was a bit more easygoing, I suppose, in my personality, and it made them comfortable or easy to kind of book and work with. And then they related the face to the photos that were being produced, and it just kind of all rolled that way. I wish I could say there was a very specific way that I, or specific formula that I followed, but I was also pursuing a bunch of other genres of photography simultaneously. So putting the pieces together of what led to what becomes a little difficult because through pursuing pet photography and fashion photography. And fashion photography was even funnier tied to music because some of those designers would actually create the custom clothing for the musicians on the stage, or they knew someone who was associated with the music industry. And all I can say is this, much the same way photography is, it's very much an industry built on relationships and connections. So becoming a social butterfly is a must. And I say this as someone who I like to joke is naturally social, but environmental or life sometimes makes you a little antisocial, that I had to actually learn how to speak to people. And I was very lucky that I started at 15, where it was a little bit less pressure and more time to learn how to talk to people and learn how to get myself out there, not be afraid to approach a stranger with a business card going, I take photos, let me tell you about what I do.
Yeah, that it sounds like the underlying thread and all that is, well, be a good person and be, you know, have, but also it's the networking, right? I mean, we hear about networking a lot, especially in event photography or weddings, like for example, it's all about the contacts and networking and referrals and all that stuff. It sounds like it's even more so that in that particular industry where, you know, it's all about who you know, and if which is a double-edged sword, right? Because if someone says, you know, that person is ridiculous, I can't work with them, they're so hard, and that's going to spread like wildfire, you know? So it's got to be good, right?
I mean, it's unavoidable to have an unhappy client in your photography career. That's just it happens. The way that I always advise people to deal with that is your response to that speaks volumes as to the kind of person that you are. And you have to remember that an unhappy client comes from some level of disappointment or some level of there was like a missed connection going on there. And the way that you handle that situation is really what sets up the reputation that you have. Because believe it or not, you can turn an unhappy client into a happy one. It might not be the easiest pathway, but you just have to remember that that kind of a thing happens. And, you know, I've been very fortunate that I've not had many of those experiences. But, you know, again, it does happen. But in terms of building your reputation and kind of mitigating that kind of and essentially something that is going to happen to you is once more, start in your local community and start small. I mean, there really is not a lot of risk to just go to a local bar and snap some photos. And plus, that's actually excellent practice for music photography because that's going to be the worst lighting you're ever going to encounter.
Yeah, so if you respect that so much. Lighting,
stadiums are going to be easy peasy for you.
Let's talk about that.
Dual benefit.
Yeah, let's talk about that because that the technical side of it, and then I want to talk about gear a little bit as well.
Yeah.
The technical side of that kind of photography seems like, you know, Navy SEAL training for photographers because you're like, you know, I mean, it's the worst conditions, right? Because it's dark and it's crowded and noisy and the lighting changes depending on what their lighting package is. They're going to change over time and you still got, and they're moving fast in low light, right? So you got to get the shot.
Logical. Thing.
Yeah. How do you do that? So take us, you know, from, so you're going to shoot a relatively well-known band, right? And it's, and they're going to perform Friday night. It's Thursday. What happens? Like, take us through, you know, all the way through from, okay, I got to shoot this band tomorrow night, all the way through to I'm done shooting this band and it's on to the next thing. What does that flow look like?
Well, first of all, I'm so excited that I got 24-hour notice. Sometimes I just get that morning. Oh, by the way, you're going to be at this venue, right? I'm like, what venue? Where?
Caesar's Palace tonight.
So first of all, it's really nice to have some 24-hour notice. But second of all, with that incredible 24-hour notice, the first thing I'm going to go on YouTube and see if I can see videos of their previous performances. The performance you're going to shoot may not necessarily be like their previous performances, but there's so much information that you can grab from that. You can see how they interact with the audience, what they tend to favor, where everyone stands on the stage. How they perform really opens up the door on exactly how you want to shoot them because you can semi pre-plan your shots. And I say pre-planning with caution because you shouldn't be so stuck on your plan that you just completely miss the shots because they're not moving according to plan. But at least it gives you some insight so you're not walking in completely blind. Next thing I do is that if I've not been to this venue before, I just go online and look at photos people have taken from inside that venue, whether it's from their cell phone or it's other photographers having shot other artists there. But just do keep in mind that when you do look up videos of, say, the artist that you're going to shoot, if the lights are consistent, that usually means they have their own lighting that they're going to bring in. But if the lights constantly change between venues, because I do suggest watching a few different live clips if they have it. I know that some local bands don't. But nowadays, with the age of social media, check their Instagram, check their Facebooks, check their TikToks, and check their tagged posts. Because fans are posting videos of having been at their shows and tagging the artists. So there's always going to be a way for you to find out exactly how they perform live. But anyways, pay attention to the lighting. Because if the lighting is changing per venue, it usually means that they're using the house's venue or the house's lights. In which case, you should definitely look up what venue you're going to shoot in to kind of get an idea of what they have available there. And then depending on what they have available there, you can figure out your gear. My go-to, whether they have incredibly bright lights or incredibly dark bar lights, is to shoot with wide aperture lenses. Lenses that I think my narrowest aperture is an f2.8 of all my lenses. I actually do not own a lens that has a narrower aperture than 2.8.
Wow.
Because I'm a very shallow depth of field photographer. It's just a part of my aesthetic and has that benefit as well of opening that pinhole wide enough to let in a lot of light into the sensor and allow more of that light to pool in, so the sensor kind of knows what it's doing. Because again, a very illogical situation is that cameras are, I say anyways, pretty blind if there's not enough light there. I mean, they're just like, I look at it, I'm like, you definitely need glasses. That is so not my subject. But,
I don't know what you were looking at.
So we got to help them a little bit. And by helping them, we are opening our aperture to make sure that enough light comes in to give it a little bit more opportunity to see better. So I'm definitely going for lenses that have a wide aperture. If I'm shooting in a bar, I won't even bother with a 2.8, to be honest with you, because some of them have no house lights at all. You've got your ambient bar lights, which makes it even more difficult if the band has not brought in their own lighting. If the band brings in their own lighting, that's a different story, because usually it's pretty bright. So my favorite lenses that I will probably run to for that are prime lenses, which scares a lot of people when it concerns concert photography, because you are fairly limited on your movement. So this is where you get a little bit more creative, because you suddenly have that
sounds so counterintuitive.
All of it is counterintuitive. Whenever I teach concert photography, I say everything you learn about photography, forget about it. You're going to do something completely different. Because the if you think about it, the conditions don't make sense. You want me to shoot action when there's no light. Like, the conditions themselves urge you to forget everything you know about photography to begin with.
Yeah.
So I'm usually reaching for, and of course I'll have a camera bag that, not the most convenient thing to carry on you, but you got to do what you got to do to get those prime lenses. I'll have a Sigma 35mm f1.2 on my Sony. If people have Canon or Nikon, they do have a 1.4, but I believe the 1.2 is mirrorless exclusive. Sorry, guys. Technological advancements going on here.
It happens.
So I will grab that. I'll grab an 85 1.4 because I find that to be a nice like middle zone. And then depending on the size of the venue, if it is fairly large or I know that the drummer is going to sit pretty far back, that is when I grab my Canon camera, because I have this lens for Canon, even though it is available for mirrorless, 135mm f1.8. And again, notice the very wide apertures here. Again, I'm letting in as much light as possible, and I am shooting them as shallow depth of field as possible, both for the light and because I find that the stage can be very cramped and cluttered, and you want to be able to give each musician their time in the spotlight, a shot that focuses on just them doing what they love best, and having a shallow depth of field that blurs out everything distracting really helps isolate that subject and give them their moment to shine in your photography. And believe me, they will favor it, because most of the time photographers tend to come in with an f4 or narrower, and they're not really blurring out a lot of that stage, and their shots are coming out pretty dark. So them being able to have that moment where it's just them and their band members are blurred out of the way and they're not even there is going to speak wonders.
That's beautiful.
And in terms of, again, camera bodies, I'm looking at camera bodies that have a very good low light capability. And what I reference by low light capability is you're able to bump up to a higher ISO without getting a lot of noise. You're still going to get noise, so forget about the idea of not having any noise at all. But with Lightroom and Photoshop, especially with their newer versions, they are so incredibly advanced at removing all of that noise. To an extent, of course. If you go expandable ISO, you're just going to have to accept that noise is a thing. But I have a very good friend who actually shoots concert on a film camera. So you can just say, well, I'm trying to mimic the beautiful look of film. Because
exactly. It's the T-Max film grain, right?
Exactly. I was like, that was totally added in post. It was intentional.
Yeah.
But I'm looking for cameras that can handle it, as well as cameras that have a pretty good autofocus system at night, because I have had instances where I was shooting shows many years ago or was on tour or something of the sort, and a lens broke, because that also happens sometimes. Things accidentally fall out of your hands or get kicked out of your hands, because I have had cameras and lenses flying out of my arms through crowd surfers. That is something to be mindful for. And sometimes the autofocus mechanism breaks, so you have to resort to manual focus, which is absolutely possible, but it is incredibly tedious in the short amount of time that you have.
Look for
cameras that are pretty good at locking onto your subject in lower light situations.
Yeah. So, okay. So your Sony mirrorless fast glass with, you know, preferably a one dot something and nothing smaller than a 2.8 aperture. Right. And then you're off into the races. That fixed lens though, like how do you, with a fixed focal length lens, I mean, I could see if you're doing, if you have that 24 hours beforehand, you're doing the research. So you know that, hey, this focal length will be perfect right there and all that. But if, what if you don't? What if you don't? What if you, like, they say, hey, can you be at Mandalay Bay tonight, you know, in 3 hours from now, and you're already out and you just got to pop over there? Really?
With Mandalay Bay, they have the House of Blues, which is a fairly large venue, has great lighting. I can shoot my 2.8s in there. So knowing that, I can grab a 24-70, a 70-200, I'm set. Although I love my primes and my very shallow depths of field, so I might just throw in another 35 or an 85. And this is how photographers work out, you know.
But you're not a big person, and those lenses, those fast Sigma glass lenses they're substantial, right? And you got a bunch of them in your bag, and you're running around getting your workout. Like, how does that work? How's that math work, Annabelle?
My chiropractor and I are on a first name basis.
Right now. I bet.
No, but in all seriousness, lenses are starting to get smaller, especially if you're switching to mirrorless. Sigma does have the contemporary line of lenses. So I do have a 28-70 from their contemporary line, which is significantly smaller than a 24-70.
Yeah.
As to how much that 4 millimeter difference means to you really does depend on the stage that you're shooting. If I'm wanting a wide angle shot, then I will grab a 14, because for me, even a 24 is not going to be wide enough. If I'm trying to get that like really wide angle semi fisheye shot, I feel like bands like Kiss are like so notable for those images because they've got lenses that are shooting them with such curved glass and you can see their big boots and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But I'm more of I feel like I shoot concerts more from a portrait standpoint. So that's just not kind of, I guess, a part of my style unless a client very specifically requests it.
This is so interesting because I feel like you're giving permission to photographers that have, you know, intentionally or unintentionally restricted themselves from doing other exciting genres of photography because they've been following those railroad tracks of you need to be good at one thing and kind of, you know, to hell with everything else. You need to be a good X kind of photographer. This is exciting, right? So it's exciting that, hey, yeah, you could get in there and try something new and be excited. Well, so when you're in there, so say you're done. So you've left the House of Blues, you got your memory card, you're good. Your lenses survived the adventure. Now what? Do you take them back to your studio and do processing and make your selects and then do a gallery? Do you give them to somebody else that does that? How does the after the event flow work?
So the after the event flow really depends on what my purpose for being there is. And yeah, of course the purpose is photograph the concert, but who hired me to do that? Was it the record label? Was it the band? Was it a magazine? Was it some sort of project? And the reason I say this really tells me how much leeway I have to edit right away, or okay, I can actually go sleep and edit this tomorrow. It's fine. Mm-hmm. I don't need to stay up all night.
Mm-hmm.
When I'm being hired by the bands, for the most part, it is an incredibly time-sensitive thing because just a day late is already irrelevant, especially if they're on tour. So what I tend to do is I have my laptop with me. I've got my card readers. Also, I have my phone, which has the Adobe programs on it and is able to synchronize with my camera. So if the band needs something, hey, I just got off stage. I literally need a photo up on Instagram right this second. I will connect my phone to my camera, transfer a couple of images that I just kind of already had in my mind when I was shooting it. Because the more you shoot, the more you can pretty quickly see what the money shots are. Mm-hmm. And as I'm shooting, I'm kind of memorizing where those photos were. I was like, okay, that was probably song 3. So it's probably going to be number this on my card. I'm just going to really quickly scroll through, find it, put it up there. It may not necessarily be the best shot you took that night, but they need something right now. And then you can develop a full gallery later. So If it's something that's urgent, I will very quickly edit it straight up Lightroom on my phone, get that out to them, deal with the rest later. But if it's something like a magazine has commissioned me for this, or a record label just needs kind of promotional images, or maybe the band, it's not that big of a show for them, but they just need some live concert shots for their website or their electronic press kit or something of the sort, then I have a little bit more leeway to take a little bit more time. And by that, I mean, I suddenly, instead of having to do it in this hour, I have 24 hours now.
Yeah,
I still try to get it out as quickly as possible, because once more, concerts become irrelevant so quickly, especially if they're doing more than one show, or if they just need the live shots and, you know, that show wasn't a big deal for them. They still want to be able to promote that show happened, and they need images for that.
So it's not like a wedding where you're going to sit on the images for 6 months or so and then release them.
No. And honestly, my method of, I actually don't do a lot of photo editing on my concert photos, because I'm one of those photographers who believes that the way it was shot and the way you see it is the way the band intended it to be. Unless it's one of those images that they go, you know what, we want to use this on a poster, but we need it to look a specific way. It needs to fit within our, say, style guide or within our aesthetic. It just needs to look more like a planned shot than something that was just taken at a live concert. And that point, of course, I'll go in and do kind of my regular retouching that you can find on any of my photography. But for concerts, for the most part, I just do little exposure tweaks, very slight color correction, because sometimes, lights don't hit the camera properly and colors get off. I'll do some little color correction, and then I will just process that whole batch and send everything out to the band and let them use the things that they like. In terms of culling, I'm very quick at culling, because for me, culling is, out of focus, out of focus, out of focus, rather than
XXX.
Because I am trying to, of course, like every photographer should, listen to me, every photographer should try to get it as close to the way you want it in camera as possible. However, I am giving permission to not beat yourself up, because I like to say that the moment you captured is more important than the technical accuracy of it. Not to use that as an excuse for, say, poor photos, because you're like, she said you don't have to be technically accurate, so I'm just going to shoot on auto, and then what happens, happens. No, but it's a permission to not beat yourself up because you caught a moment that really is so important for that show, so important for that artist, or so important for that fan. Maybe you caught a photo of the fan's hand being touched by the artist or something of the sort. You caught that moment, and it may not be the perfect exposure, the absolute tack sharp focus, or something else may be amiss, but capturing that moment is so sentimental and important that it's okay to not beat yourself up for not making it perfect. Because as much as we try to get it right in the camera, concerts throw conditions at us that are completely out of our control. It's not a studio. You can't tell them what to do.
Yeah, you can't. Yeah, you're a fly on the wall. When you're running around in those situations, are you shooting primarily in manual? Are you doing aperture priority? I'm guessing aperture priority, or
what? I shoot completely in manual.
Manual.
And the reason for this, I know a lot of photographers will favor aperture priority, and there's nothing, or shutter priority, depending on what they're shooting. And there's nothing wrong with that, but I've always been a person who wants to control every aspect of that shot. And when you do turn over some aspects of that to the camera's discretion, for the camera to make the decisions for you, it doesn't always make decisions I agree with. So being the control freak that I am with that, I want to be able to control all of the settings. And it does sound incredibly daunting to do that in a concert situation, but this is the way that I kind of figured out a system to be able to do it. So exposure is three components, right? It's aperture plus shutter speed plus ISO, which equals your exposure. Well, instead of trying to do a balancing act between all three, I start figuring out which part of that exposure equation my priority is and for why. Usually my priority is the aperture, which is shallow depth of field letting in the most amount of light. So I use that as my baseline. I set my aperture to the widest it can go, and it just stays there. It's fixed. So now you only have two other variables to manage.
Yeah.
Makes it a little bit easier than trying to do a balancing act of three. Yeah. So after that, you see ISO or shutter speed, and then you determine what's more important to you. And the way that I decide what's more important to me is, how dark is that venue? Because in a way, the venue kind of takes part of that choice away from you. Because if it's incredibly dark, then why are we here arguing with ourselves? Like, we already know what the answer is. We're going to have to bump that ISO up because there's just no other way around it. And yes, you can shoot in RAW and save a lot of that information, but the time that you're spending editing, I personally don't have that kind of time or personal patience for a concert shoot to sit there editing every single shot to that extent.
Yeah.
So depending on the light of the venue, you'll either pick your shutter speed or your ISO. Now, there is a little trick with shutter speed, which I'm going to explain once I go back and talk about frames per second on a camera.
Yes, I love this.
Frames per second on a camera. How many shots your camera can take when you press down on the shutter and hold it? Well, cameras by default aren't set to that, which is burst mode. You do need to set that up for it to continuously shoot as you press down on the shutter. The names vary in all camera brands because of patent, copyright, blah, blah, blah reasons. Yeah. I never got into it other than you're making this incredibly confusing to teach when you have students with five different camera brands and none of them have a consistent name for the same setting.
Right. Yeah.
But generally, I believe in most cameras, it's denoted as burst mode, high speed continuous shooting, high speed, whatever the name of the setting is, it's the one that takes all those shots when you press down on the shutter. Now, to go back to shutter speed, you can cheat with a slightly lower shutter speed than you wanted if you have your camera on burst mode, because as you're holding it down and it's flashing all of those shots, I can guarantee there's going to be a completely still image in that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So you can cheat once more, making your shutter speed a little slower than you had expected to be able to keep your ISO at a more moderate level and still be able to get those still shots. And yes, you might still see a little bit of motion blur on the hands of their guitarist or they're holding the microphone or something, but the face is going to be still. And that's the thing that most people look at first and foremost in a shot.
The eyes, yeah. The eyes. Yep.
Precisely.
Wow. That is so cool.
That's how it goes.
That so is manual. So cool.
And again, your camera will not make those decisions if you're not on manual.
Yeah.
It's counterintuitive.
Because you're like you said, you're taking control back from the camera, but you're essentially doing what the camera would be doing. The camera would make the decision that, okay, I need to be at a higher ISO because she wants it like this, or, you know, based on if she's aperture priority and she's wide open, then I, you know, the other two things need to fall over here. But you're adding logic into it. Like, I know this venue is going to look like this, so therefore I know that my ISO needs to be cranked up to this level, and I know that I like shallow depth of field, therefore this other thing solves itself, right?
So. Yep. I mean, that's all. You can take that same advice into, like, photo editing. Why photo editing can be fun? Because it's just, you're presented with tools. They do something different in every situation. They're never going to have a consistency for what they do. And mm-hmm. then you problem solve which tool is going to give you the best result. So I find camera settings to be the same thing. They're essentially just tools in your hand. Problem solving or logically deducing what settings will get you what you want. And of course, we're explaining this in such a kind of a long-winded way. These decisions don't happen in an hour. Like,
these are split
seconds.
It's a lot more
instantaneous than that.
Yeah, I love it. I love it. Hey, there's a person showed up behind you there, by the way. Look at that. There's a gremlin behind you.
You got the little dog in the show.
We got the dog. Woo, you're talking about that. Okay, I got a couple more questions, then I'm going to let you go. So, yeah, you touched on this a little bit. RAW versus JPEG. Are you shooting JPEG when you're out there, or RAW so you have the latitude? What's your flavor?
Depends on the venue.
Okay.
So I am shooting with very, very high megapixel cameras that I have found is able to recover a lot of information. I mean, what RAW versus JPEG really is RAW is the uncompressed information off of that camera, because when you turn it into a JPEG, it gets squished. I'm mm-hmm. sure that's not the technically accurate term, but
it'll
I just
work.
Imagine an actual image just going broop.
Yeah.
So as you do that, that information essentially gets burned into that, or information gets lost because we're squishing it all together and then you're not able to recover it. So RAW is used, of course, for very heavy editing, but sometimes RAW will lag your camera, especially if you're not investing in a card that can write very fast.
Mm.
You should be investing in a card that writes fast, but if you don't have the money to shoot on a $300 car that can write fast, that's okay, because I actually shoot a lot of my concerts on JPEG because I'm not editing them a lot. Oh, I'm not doing significant tweaks because I feel like my reliance on the settings that I have set for it is enough. That being said, if I'm shooting once more, going back to the bar, and the reason I keep talking about the bar is because this is where concert photographers get their start. And if you didn't get your start there, then you're going to learn real quick what it means to photograph a band in a bar.
Yeah.
It's very dark. That one, I will shoot in RAW. That also being said, a lot of bands don't have the leeway to really jump around and go absolutely bonkers in a bar because they are a little bit constricted in space. So you do get the leeway or the leisure of they're not moving as much as you can expect. So therefore, if you do get some lag with your RAW, that's okay. Still shoot it on burst mode. Of course, it's not going to be as fast as JPEG, but you're fine because they're not moving as much. But when I'm shooting venues that are well lit or I'm shooting music festivals, I know I'm not going to edit them much. We're going to do JPEG. It processes faster on my computer. It runs out faster. At the end of the day, you really only need 8 megapixels to make a print. Granted, you want obviously more to make a good quality print, but you're not losing that much. And I feel like I'm going to get so hated by
the time. You're going to get some mail.
Where by RAW by saying this? I've gotten into enough debates online just to know that. But RAW has a time and a place, and JPEG has a time and a place. For example, my animal sport photography, I'm never shooting that in RAW. You're trying to tell me you want to shoot a dog that runs through an entire course in 5 seconds in RAW and be able to capture every single obstacle? No way. The cameras are just not – the cameras, the cars, none of it is going to be fast enough to capture
it's a
that.
Tool. It's tools, right? And it's making you as the artist are making decisions on what the right tools are, whether it be RAW versus JPEG or Zoom versus fixed focal length or whatever, depending on the subject matter that you're capturing at the time. Instead of the route like you kind of alluded to where some photographers will say – go RAW or go home. You want to capture as much data as your camera can grab so that you have more latitude in post-processing later. And you're arguing, get it right in the camera if the job needs that, right? If you get are shooting dogs running a whole circuit in a half a second, then probably want to shoot JPEG, right?
And look, I do shoot RAW. I do. Yeah. There are so many jobs that I do where we're going to do a lot of editing here. Or, you know what? I show up to a shoot outdoors and the lighting conditions are not okay. No matter what kind of light modifiers I'm using, I'm immediately like, I need to save this guy. There's no way that I can expose for this properly.
Right.
And that's totally fine. It just concerts are not always that place. They can be that place very easily. But again, if you're shooting an outdoor venue or this like perfectly lit venue, because honestly, lights in say stadiums, amphitheaters, those big concert venues that have a big band coming through, they're very bright. They're brighter than your studio lights. Yeah, like you're okay.
You're good. You got the photons to play with. Okay, so you've done the shoot. You've got the images edited to your satisfaction. Yeah. Then what? You put them in a gallery. You zip them up. Put them on Dropbox. How does the client file mail? I've never heard of that. File mail.
It's a large image transfer. I was like, I see you writing it, Daniel.
I'm writing it. I'm totally taking notes.
So I personally use file mail just because I have had enough clients going, I don't like Google Drive. I can't figure it out. I don't like Dropbox. I can't figure it out. I don't like Box. I can't figure it out. I don't know how to use cloud services, which is fine because honestly, I can tell you everything about a camera and I can tell you zilch about a computer. I got someone to build my computer for me because I don't know a whole lot about that.
Yeah.
So I found that a very easy service to use is one that was called FileMail. Other people use WeTransfer. They're the same things. It basically allows you to transfer very large files via email to your client. So photos are done. I created everything my client wants. I plop it into there. I send it over to their email address. All they have to do is click the link, click download, and it downloads as a zip.
And they got the product. They got the product.
For some, I walk them through how a zip file works, and that's about it. Because again, I found so many issues with Google Drive, Dropbox, all those services, which I used to use, and just people who, you know what, those services just don't work for them for XYZ reason. But this one works for everyone. And the best part of it is that if you do have a subscription for them, you can keep, you can set how long you keep those files active. Knowing that I don't want to keep everything like bucking up those cloud servers and whatnot forever. Yeah. I know that I can set it to say expire in 30 days. They have 30 days to download it.
And then they get it.
And after you 30 days, I'm like, not my problem.
That's so interesting because, you know, the I hear that flow, which is always, you know, kind of surprising to me that you are not, or the photographers like you aren't using gallery type services with usernames and passwords and,
I mean,
you know.
I do for other clients, just not for music.
But not music. Okay. Okay. For music, it's more, here's shots. I got them done. Well, boom. Here's a zip file. Go get them.
Music in terms of concerts. Mm-hmm. If it was a promotional session, the way that I run those photo shoots, which is basically event photo shoots run one way and concerts are considered event photo shoots, much like the dog sports and whatnot. And then essentially portrait shoots, whether it's portraits of animals or people or, you know, musician promos or something, is run a different way. I just find it to be easier to have that separation because the two techniques don't necessarily work for one another. Mm-hmm. For concerts, it would not make sense to have that gallery format because I don't have the time to wait for them to pick out the photos that they want me to send them. It just, here's the whole batch. Do what you got to do with it.
That's and you just cut it right there. It's done. It's clean. It's over. You got the photos. So then, and then you get paid. So how does that piece work?
I mean, like, I get paid ahead of time.
You get paid before you show up, so you're not begging for your money. And without revealing anything classified, photographers are looking to get in. I know the answer is going to be depends, but what does money look like, you know, in this overall industry? I mean, are you going to be making, you get like $50,000 to shoot this band, or is it more like $50 to shoot this band?
Like Bernie.
Yeah. Yeah.
and really, that kind of sum for a single band usually means that you're their on retainer exclusive photographer. It does exist. A lot of the big artists do have their own personal photographer. But in terms of money, see, because COVID happened, it's now incredibly difficult to advise on what that landscape looks like. Because prior to that, in terms of the income ratio of all the different genres that I shoot, mine was actually the highest in music.
Wow.
But that also has to do with the fact that music photos are used in different places. And when music photos are used in different places, you collect licensing fees. I find that the sessions themselves is not the biggest moneymaker in terms of concerts. It's the licensing fees afterwards. It's the endorsement companies that want to use the photos. It's the outlets that want to use the photos. It's or whatever, or if the band has a commercial use for those photos beyond just posting online. Technically, posting online, promoting a product is commercial use, but I do charge differently for that because it's not the same as, hey, they printed my work and sold it as a physical product, which makes it a little bit different. So money in music really also depends on how you set up your business. I got very lucky with the way that I set everything up, which took many, many, many years to kind of dwindle down and figure out, is that I have a pretty low overhead. So it allows me a lot more wiggle room in terms of profit margins just because my overhead is low. It's a lot lower than it is for other photographers. So the best place to start is always to figure out what your actual cost of doing business is. Do that whole formula, figure it out, and then see what your market in music in the particular place that you are can handle. I lived in Los Angeles for pretty much my entire life. I actually just moved to Las Vegas in April. So I can't even consider myself like a real Nevadian because I just haven't even been here a year. But I lived in a city where music is entertainment industry. If you want to make money in that career as a photographer, you need to go to the hubs of where that is because the income is going to be pretty different. However, I have actually not worked in a small town. And I might be very wrong. I might be factual that you will make more in a small town because you are the photographer for all the bands that are there or all the bands that are coming through. Because believe it or not, even big bands go through kind of small towns you never would expect them to go through. And there's going to need to be a photographer there. So it really just depends on how you structured everything
and do your homework, right? So the call comes in to photographer, small town photographer, and you know, small to medium-sized band says, hey, we're going to be at so-and-so club tonight, can you come shoot us? What happens after that? Do you say, yeah, I charge this much, you know, or I charge this much per hour to be there? Or do you get into a licensing discussion with them? Like, what happens at that, on that particular first touch call?
Absolutely. I do have kind of a default email that I will, of course, customize per the client, but it just, the default part of it lists all of my information, which I will give them the rate. I do flat rates for concerts just because by time it's, not only is it stressful, it doesn't always work out that way. So just accept that things are not going to happen on time. That's just a part of that industry that you're going to have to be okay with. It's not a portrait session where they show up an hour late and you did a 2-hour shoot and you're like, I'm still living, you know, at the end of the hour.
Mm-hmm.
No, concerts don't happen that way. I don't think any of the entertainment industry happens that way. I have plenty of friends and like television and movie productions go, oh no, nothing ever happens on time.
Yeah.
Stop. She has an opinion as well.
See, nothing ever happens on time. Look at that.
Yeah, I was like, dog has an opinion. We live in a condo and someone just walked past the door and she's like, I'm a guard dog now. At 10 pounds, I can do some damage. But anywho, I will list what I charge for the set because I charge per set.
Yep.
That makes it, and set is the band playing the set. So basically you charge per band. Mm-hmm. And band sets, if they're openers, 20 to 45 minutes, depending on how it's set up. If they're headliners, an hour to two. Again, it's just something you accept. So I charge for the set. I list all of the information of what they can expect to receive for that price, what they are allowed to do with those photos, and what my additional costs would be if they want to do something else with those photos. And again, that thing is kind of always open for discussion because I'll have bands coming back to me a year later being like, hey, my endorser really likes this shot you took a year ago. Let's chat. Let's work something out. Mm-hmm. I really like the conversation aspect of it and the communication aspect of it because I feel like getting to know your client on kind of that level beyond just professionalism. And that's always very hard to kind of explain because you still remain professional, but that doesn't mean you need to sit there like a corporate lawyer.
Right.
With your business suit being like, I have no personality. This is all business. So right. I do like being able to have that open communication and telling them that, hey, you can come and talk to me. You can ask me questions. Like I'm here and I'm available anytime. Let's chat. Let's work it out. Let's work it out based on the kind of band that you are, what you're able to do, what you're able to afford. Because again, having that kind of relation and that communication also favors you in so many different ways beyond just being a good person.
Yeah. And so
figure out what your client wants.
Right. So you're being a human, right? So instead of saying, here's my price list, take it or leave it, you know, you have a conversation, say, oh, you're a new band, whatever, you know. You can't afford this. Well, what if we do it like this? You know, and
exactly.
Okay.
And my suggestion for that is always you can figure out, I guess, I mean, in terms of budget, it has to be a reasonable budget. When I say you can kind of figure out how to work in a budget, I'm not saying you charge $200 and they're like, well, I can give you $25. Like we're talking about a reasonable budget for the amount of time that you're investing. And I look into it and I'm like, well, maybe they can't afford, say, a premium rate, but what if I just give them less of this, or I just spend less time there, or I get a little bit more lenient in certain things. I was like, hey, can't afford the premium package, would say includes 100 photos. Let me give you 30 great ones. I'm not going to stay for your whole set. I'm going to be there for a couple songs. Get what you want. Go. You can find a way to work with it. And you know what? If it doesn't suit you, that's fine. Like, it's okay to walk away because they're like, you know, you can't do it. I give them my lowest rate. They're like, that's still too much. And I'm like, that's okay. I know some new concert photographers who would love to get a crack at this. So how about I put you in touch with somebody that I know and see if something works out there? Because I don't believe in disallowing someone from having good photos just because they don't have the budget for it. Because yes, you should be budgeting, but it goes back to the same thing as, well, a poor family who really wants those beautiful memories with their children Are you going to actually sit there and tell them that because they're poor, they're not allowed to have a photographer? Like, there's a photographer for everybody. And yes, as you grow in your career, you will kind of go past the higher price points, the higher price points. I'm not going to sit here and lie and say that I'm incredibly affordable for everybody. Like, sure. you do constantly rise up there, which is the goal. This is your job. This is your career. This is how you feed yourself. But there's photographers for every price point. So if you're out of that price point, maybe you know someone that is in that price point that you're able to offer to them, because it's all just kind of stepping stones. And once more, going back to photography being a community, let's keep it a community.
Yes, I love this. I love this. So much to talk about. So much to touch on. Thank you for your time today. This has been fantastic, educational. My brain is exploding. I feel like I want to go out to a bar and shoot tomorrow night, Friday night, and you know, it just like just and fail, because I know I'd fail, because I'm like,
no. No, so, but is failure, just learning.
Exactly, learning. So what's next? What's the next gig you're working on that you can tell us about?
Ooh, I am always so terrified to answer the what's next question, because I live on a Google Calendar, because I don't know what's happening tomorrow. I look at it and I'm like, oh yeah.
Me too. I'm the same way.
I mean, you can always, again, check the Sigma website. I do a lot of webinars and events with them. I do a lot of live stream shoots with them as well. So we've got some stuff coming up there. I do teach for the California folks listening in at Sammy's Camera. I do commute all the way over there. I believe I might have some stuff coming up with camera stores such as BNC. I know that the photography trade shows are coming up. So. Yeah.
You're
can't tell you specifically what's going on. Just
you're just busy.
You're calendar, and I'm like, oh yeah, I'm doing that thing tomorrow. But it's kind of keep a lookout on those different avenues and see if you see my name pop up.
I love it. I love it. So here, parting shot. Last question: why Sigma over like native Sony glass or other manufacturers? Why do you love Sigma glass?
Because it is a native. No, but it communicates so beautifully, fluently, eloquently with all those camera bodies. I mean, I've been using Sigmas through my Canons, my Sonys. And I say Canons and Sonys because I just keep adding cameras. I don't tend to take them away. Poor closet is just starting to run out of space a little bit there, but it's okay. You can always find more space.
Yeah.
But the Sigma lenses are incredibly durable, which is something that I really favor, considering I work with animals and I work with musicians. And, you know, that equates to drops, bumps, and ouchies unintentionally. The glass is incredibly sharp. I never have to actually pull up a sharpness slider or a clarity slider. It makes my life a lot easier. I mean, the colors are beautiful. And they have such a grand selection of lenses. They even have some lenses that other cameramen do not have, such as for those that shoot on crop sensors, they have actual zoom lenses at f1.8, which is immediately just like, because you don't see anything faster than a 2.8 on zooms, and yet they found a way to do it.
Wow.
So
wow.
That is why my whole kit is filled with nearly every Sigma lens on their line.
And it's very light. It's very light, right? Yeah, all that glass.
Yeah, I'm working out those arms. They're contemporary line for mirrorless, and actually their new art lenses for mirrorless are very light. Like their new 85 for mirrorless systems is so small and light, and it's an art lens, and that is such a staple lens, which also don't be afraid of using lenses that technically in their description are not intended for the use you're putting them through. Like the 85 is a portrait lens, and I use it a lot for action shots.
Yeah, why not? Light's light, so, right?
Yeah, I was like, you don't lose anything.
Where would you like the photographers that are watching or listening to this to go to check out your work and see all the good things that you're putting out there?
So I created my business name when I was 15, and going back to being really fascinated with writing and language, I unfortunately picked an incredibly difficult word to both spell and pronounce, which is now kicking me in the butt all these years later. So the easiest way to get a hold of me instead of attempting to spell my website name is by Googling Annabelle Deflux, A-N-A-B-L-D-F-L-U-X, and you will find all of my socials, my website, a million different ways to get in touch with me. If you send a raven with a note to my window, that's okay too. I do accept those.
Ravens.
Must yeah, be a winter, raven though. The pigeons can't fly this high.
I was gonna say winter is never coming to Las Vegas. I'm just saying.
It had snowed earlier this year for people. It was weird.
Well, look at that. Look at that.
Yeah.
Annabelle, thank you. Thank you for doing this. I appreciate you sharing all this stuff. This is, it's been amazing. I feel like this has been a masterclass almost on event and concert photography and musician photography. And I feel like there are probably another 30 masterclasses inside of you for various genres that you could talk about.
So, I'm trying.
So thank you. I appreciate your time today. And you have a good weekend.
You too. Thank you so much.
Okay. Take care.
This is Twitter.